So we are here for the first The Edge in Conversation, and this time we're talking about the expansion of fictional worlds. I'm Rebecca James, and I'm joined by Annika, who's
Hello.
Our editor, and Rahana, who is our features editor.
Hi, y'all.
So the main impetus for this conversation is the upcoming release of Rogue One and the expansion of the Star Wars universe.
Yes.
So, obviously, we've had Episode 7, which is the first kind of big expansion of Star Wars since the prequels.
Mm. Yes.
And Rogue One is kind of a side story with very few familiar characters.
Yeah, yes. It's kind of filling in that gap in between, but what was it you were saying about?
It's set just before A New Hope.
Mm.
So the only problem with it is that you kind of know how it's going to end. They're going to get the plans to the Death Star. It's going to set up what happens in A New Hope.
Mm.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how Jyn Erso, I think, is Felicity Jones' character.
Yeah.
How she, like, factors into it and what she is in the universe, but at the same time...
And New Hope doesn't need setting up at the same time, as
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I just think it's a little bit unnecessary.
I think one of the interesting things, part of it, will be that expansion of kind of Darth Vader as... Because we didn't get that satisfaction in terms of his character with the prequels. I think there's a lot of problems with those. Whereas watching the trailer for Rogue One, that final moment where you see Darth Vader turn around, I felt a sense of excitement about that character that I didn't feel watching the prequels.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I think, as well, I mean, it's a chance to make Darth Vader scary again, isn't it? Because, I mean, I grew up on, because of my age, I grew up on the prequels, so I actually, like, because you saw, like, him before he was Darth Vader...
Hayden Christensen
did ruin it. I used to, like, have such a massive crush on him as a child, but now it's like, but you're acting so bad.
For me, it's odd, because I watched them as the... original trilogy, and then I watched the prequels afterwards.
Yeah.
So I think I had a very different experience of them. Well, not to kind of people who watched it at the time, but certainly kind of people who are slightly younger, is that most people have watched it chronologically now. And I think that gives you a very different impression of the characters and the world.
I think I watched The Phantom Menace first, because that came out the year I was born. No, it didn't. It came out earlier than that.
1999.
What? Oh, 99. I thought it was 97.
I'm pretty sure you were alive.
Yeah.
I am alive at that point. I thought it was 97.
Because I remember those little Jar Jar Binksy things.
That's really funny.
Jar Jar Binks. That's why
I grew up, like, when I was younger, I watched... I remember Phantom Menace, and I remember watching Attack of the Clones, and then I think it was after Attack of the Clones that I went and watched the original three, and then I remember going to see Revenge of the Sith at the cinema.
You saw it at the cinema. That's tragic.
Yeah, I know, right? Paid money to see that. But I think, it's that idea, isn't it? Like, it was kind of what we were saying about Rogue One, though. It's like you were saying that maybe it's kind of from the success of Force Awakens coming back and Star Wars is big again. But the thing is, actually, Rogue One was planned from before Number 7. They planned them at the same time, which is really interesting.
Was the Han Solo pre-planned, or did that one come after?
I think that's one of the ones that they had unnamed Star Wars project, which makes you wonder if they always had it planned.
I think it was prequel. Well, no, because it was either Han Solo or they were gonna go Obi-Wan. I think that was the other option they were thinking
about. So I think
about.
Because obviously Han Solo dies in Force Awakens, spoilers. Sorry,
I got so much.
I think maybe that's why they did go for Han Solo. I think it's probably a little bit purposeful, a little bit towards like. Because they saw how upset people were.
But it's like we don't really need to see Han Solo before
Harrison
Star Wars.
Ford is perfect.
And as I'm skeptical of origin stories anyway, I think that any superhero movie starts
like
X-Men, with an origin
X-Men
story.
Origins, the worst origin story.
I think that probably makes everyone skeptical of origin stories
so
after
bad.
That one.
I mean, the X-Men universe is a really good example of how muddled universe expansion can get.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, First Class was really, really good.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's my favourite X-Men film for sure. Definitely probably one of my favourites.
It was a great standalone movie. Then Days of Future Past came in and it just confused everything.
Yeah.
And then Apocalypse came and undid that.
Yeah.
I don't know where I stand with these characters anymore.
I really enjoyed Days of Future Past as a film, not thinking about the kind of ramifications and stuff. Apocalypse I found really disappointing, just from the point of view that either this didn't happen at all in this original timeline that we had going with X-Men 1, 2 and 3, or it did and it had no impact. And I feel like having this kind of, I mean, as a big bad, Apocalypse was such a disappointment anyway. Like, I grew up on the X-Men cartoons, and that was such an amazing storyline, and it worked really well. So I can only imagine anyone who read the comics felt about it. He just felt really impotent as a bad guy.
Yeah, I can't watch it without thinking about the timeline and thinking about like how it affects the films I've already seen.
Yeah, that really
frustrates. And the films that I love. And
I mean, I tend to take it as X-Men 1, 2 and 3 are wiped out.
Yeah.
Like, that is a blank slate to be filled.
But that wasn't the intention when they made First Class initially, was it? First Class was meant to be setting up the original trilogy. But because I think it's off the success of how well First Class did, they were like, crap, like, this is an awesome cast, and we have to build from this. But
we have to get both casts together because that looks so good on paper, but
it didn't work.
I also think part of the problem is that The Last Stand closed so many doors that they shouldn't have.
Yeah, Last Stand is a bit of a
flop. And so to undo that and give themselves that kind of slate to move forward, they almost had to go the Days of Future Past route and get rid of 1, 2 and 3. Or say that 1, 2 and 3 happened
in a separate time.
As somehow. So you have Days of Future Past, which if we say that as like ground zero, when Logan wakes up, that is like point zero. 1, 2 and 3, maybe the events happen, but they happen in different ways and you get a different narrative from it. But we don't know that yet because we haven't seen that.
Yeah. It was like with Deadpool as well, because of how bad Origins was. They had to rewrite Deadpool out of that, because they've used the same actor, but obviously it's a completely different
I think universe. They used the meta.
Yeah, they used the meta advantage very well to kind of tease that. But
I mean, Deadpool is definitely a passion project for Ryan Reynolds, and I get the feeling that Deadpool in X-Men Origins wasn't the Deadpool that he signed up to play.
No, not at all.
That was terrible.
I think there's a lot of issues with that film.
And there's so many issues with Origins.
It tries to cover so much time and space.
To be honest,
is the Gambit movie still happening?
I think it is. Is that Channing
Tatum? That's Channing, yeah.
Yes, it's good been delayed to 2018. They haven't started pre-production on it yet.
I was just thinking, like, is there an origin story that's ever been good? I can't think of one.
But Maleficent wasn't terrible. It wasn't great.
Maleficent
For me, I think the problem with Maleficent was I think they should have kept the original Sleeping Beauty ending, because I think it would have made the impact so much bigger. But obviously it's a kids film, like, you can't kill off the character you've just invested an hour and a half in. But I really wish they'd kept it the same way as the original Sleeping Beauty ends, where she like gets killed, because I think that the film, like the whole film, like it's quite like it can get quite dark thematically, like everyone like talks about at the beginning and like kind of the imagery, like the rape imagery kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think if they'd followed through with like the protagonist getting killed at the end, it would have been way better.
Yeah, I didn't like the maternal twist with that.
No, I did not like the ending of the lesson. But that's I guess Disney are another one, aren't they? They keep
remakes and live-action remakes seems to be the big thing.
Other big thing.
Yes.
And, like, yeah, adding to the fictional world through that is, like, adding extra tidbits, isn't it?
I think the thing, I don't know, I can't think of any kind of origin films that have been done separate after the fact that have been as fulfilling as the original materials. I think that people like the idea of exploring these characters and how they get to be, but actually, a lot of the time, so when you watch superhero films, you just want them to put on the suit.
Yeah.
You don't care about that kind of process. Yes, it's nice to see a little bit about how they were beforehand, and I actually think Deadpool did that really well, that kind of movement, because it didn't start at the start. I think the non-linear narrative worked really well from that point of view. But I just think we're not interested in how they become that person.
I just don't think that origin stories translate well on film. I think they do really well in literature, like in fan fiction or like in like a novel or something, but not on film.
Yeah,
where
I guess
you've already placed the
original. I think definitely where you look at things like Spider-Man, which they keep redoing as an origin story. I mean, I'm quite excited because I think, I'm not sure what they're doing with the Tom Holland one, whether they're doing it as an origin, or I think they're kicking straight. I think they're not doing it as an origin because obviously he was introduced in Civil War, yeah, and he was already Spider-Man by that point. So I think they're kicking right in, and I think that's going to be really exciting because I think Tom Holland's great.
The thing with that one, though, is that I'm annoyed that they keep going with the Peter Parker story.
Yeah, because Miles Morales. They should have gone Miles Morales. Yeah. Definitely.
I'm full on for Spider-Gwen.
Yeah, just like if you're gonna redo it, stop remaking.
Yeah, the same story. I think.
The white teenage boy. The problem is that written into the contract that they have with Marvel, it says the Spider-Man that they can make is white Peter Parker.
Yeah. Which is frustrating because, like, I had loads of cool people I think they should have cast as Miles Morales, Spider-Man. But I do have complete faith in Tom Holland, that's the thing. Like, as soon as they announced his casting, I was one of the few people, like, who was like, do you know what, I think he's going to be great. And I think as soon as they introduced him to Civil War, he was one of the best parts of Civil War.
I had reservations at the start. It is really nice to see a teenage boy Spider-Man. Mm. Because both Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire both look like men.
Yeah.
And sounded like films.
Yeah, exactly. And Spider-Man
Tom's like a baby.
Spider-Man isn't meant to be kind of an adult character. He's a teenage boy, and there's a real joy.
Authenticity
with that.
In that. Yeah. And also, he's just a damn good actor. Yeah. If any of you have seen The Impossible, oh my goodness, that was the reason I completely trusted it. So he is the youngest, one of the youngest actors in that film. Like, he's with Ewan McGregor and Naomi Watts, who are obviously both massive names, and he's better than both of them combined. He carries that entire film, and he was 14 when they shot that. And I think that says a lot.
Also, like, the DC universe and how they keep trying to rehash and try and imitate the Marvel universe.
Yeah, with their expansions, yeah.
Failing with their choices.
I think part of the reason why the Marvel kind of expansion and this idea of this ever kind of growing fictional world works is because each film has their own style and their own kind of, even own genre. Because, you know, Captain America is really a World War One movie.
Yeah. Thor is fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And then you've got stuff like the Netflix series, which are a lot darker.
Yeah.
Like a completely, it's like they always say, it's street level. It's completely different.
Mm.
They're not afraid to look outside the mould. It's the same with Doctor Strange. They've gone for a very different director to some of the other kind of big blockbuster ones they've done.
Thor Ragnarok's going to be really interesting because it's Taika Waititi who did Hunt for the Wild People and What We Do in the Shadows. So he's like this quite quirky New Zealand director. Mm. And I know that he's planning on doing something like completely by himself.
That'll be interesting. It'll be kind of like when Alfonso Cuarón did Prisoner of Azkaban, which is very different stylistically from the rest of it. I mean, obviously you've got the first two with Chris Columbus, the third one with Alfonso Cuarón, the fourth one
Mike Newell.
Yes, and then the rest of it is David Yates.
Yeah.
And it's a very David Yates has a very distinct style.
Yeah.
And obviously David Yates is directing the new Fantastic Beasts films as well. Yes. So it'll be interesting to see how that style carries across, but telling a new story in a completely different era.
Because in many ways, Fantastic Beasts is completely unrelated to the stories we've seen. It's before them all, it's set in America. It's very distinct, and I think this is an expansion of a fictional world that we've not really seen before.
Yeah. I mean, they are talking, there's been hints that they're going to go into the Dumbledore Grindelwald stuff. But I don't know if I actually want them to do that. I think I'd prefer it if they just focus on Newt Scamander. Because I think, one, they've got Eddie Redmayne on board, which is great. And, like, from the trailers and stuff, it looks like they're going to do something really exciting with these films.
And I think the main thing we take away from this is that we want to see expansion for creative reasons, not for money-making reasons or because people think that's what people want to see. It's about creating brand new narratives and actual stories.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like, that's kind of why I've not seen it yet and I don't really know the story, but that's kind of why Cursed Child's kind of fallen flat a little bit, because people feel like it's fan fiction but it's not well developed. It's just J.K. Rowling trying to pander to audiences, and it's
filling in the blanks with a really, really familiar story that doesn't feel authentic.
I think authenticity is the main thing. It doesn't feel true to the characters that we know and love. And I think this comes back to possession of the world. J.K. Rowling wants to have everything her way.
Yeah.
And people aren't allowed to then
expand themselves.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the great things about literature and film, is you can think about what actually happens next. What would I want to see? Not necessarily what the director or the writer wants us to see.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is a topic that we could talk for a very long time about. Yes. So thank you for listening to the first The Edge in Conversation. Look back on the website to find the next one.
Bye.
Bye.